Betts holding, and that one is torched into left center field. That's way back there, up against the wall. Here comes Mookie Betts rounding third. He's trying to score, and he will without a throw to the plate.
Look at this ball. This ball is on a line, and it doesn't stop till it hits the wall about halfway up.
That's another undercut right there. And that just stays on a line as it caroms off the wall. No question that Betts was going to be able to score, and the Red Sox take the one-run lead.
Second RBI of the day for Xander Bogaerts. He hit the daylights out.
That would be the difference as the Red Sox come from behind and beat the Astros 4-3. And Mookie Betts was actually on base because of an error the Astros had a little bit earlier in the inning. So the Astros took 2-3 against the Red Sox. They obviously dropped the Sunday game. George Springer left that game with some kind of back injury and was asked afterwards how long he's had this injury.
I don't know. It's just kind of one of those things where I felt it more and more, and kind of dumb to try to play through it. So again, we'll see what happens tomorrow, and hopefully be all right.
Springer will not play tonight against the White Sox. I felt the most important developments this weekend was Josh James on Saturday, who was able to get out of a bases loaded jam in the fifth inning. And this was the Josh James that we were hoping we would see in 2019.
It's the one we saw in Fenway Park last year. He's good against the Red Sox. For whatever weight that holds, that is a very important thing, I think, to have in your bullpen. A guy who is very good against one of the most talented lineups in baseball.
And I think him learning how to come in and be aggressive in a reliever's role and get right into it has been a big part of him adjusting to this. And it's been really good to see. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be able to depend on him or fully trust him until I can see it for an extended period of time. But these are all the things that you don't really want to talk about, and they're not very hot takey, but the depth in your bullpen, injuries, all these things matter come crunch time. We're starting to see it with the injuries. There's a part of me that would, I don't mind Springer having a back issue right now, as long as they're dealing with it aggressively, like aggressively waiting for him to get better. Like aggressively not doing a damn thing.
Being aggressively conservative.
Yeah, do a stint on the 10-day DL. Wait, it's not the DL anymore. What's it called?
IL.
The IL.
Still sounds weird.
They're still writing DL in articles. That's what's driving me crazy.
Are they?
When I had Siri, yeah, they're still writing it in articles. This is the thing that drives me nuts. This is the kind of thing where, like, when I say something and then old-time baseball people are like, oh, stick to football because they haven't kept up. I'll say something like, well, you know, people don't really pay attention to batting average anymore. Whatever, football guy. Go back to talking about leather balls and everything. Yeah. Like, oh, okay. But no, the DL's not called the DL anymore because it was insensitive, apparently, to nobody.
I was offended right there, actually.
A single person complained about it, but
no,
we had to change it.
It was me. It was me all along.
You were very offended.
I want everyone to know it was me.
So, Springer, I'm not overly worried about Springer. I'm still not clear whether this was something that was bothering him throughout the game, or he was saying that it's been bothering him for, like, several days.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I wasn't quite clear on that.
I'm not sure either. And again, for a guy who swings that hard, that, you know, that viciously, you have to be very cautious when it comes to that injury. The Astros, no days off. They face the White Sox at home as they begin a 10-game homestand. Next headline, the Texans finally made one of their most obvious moves of the offseason. This came down Friday after our show came to an end. They have released tight end Ryan Griffin, which leads to the question, why did it take so long?
I think they wanted to at least partially see what they had in Kahale Waring. And I know you can't tell a whole lot from rookie minicamp. There are times where it's like the one last box you want to check is to see the guy in person. Because sometimes guys will show up. This will happen. Guys will show up and, like, in the first minicamp, you realize, I don't know how this happened, but we made a mistake. Like, this guy can't move. Or maybe this guy's injured or something. So there is that element to, like, getting the new toy out of from under the tree, unwrapping it completely, putting the batteries in it and seeing how it plays before you send the old one packing. And that might have been as simple as what it was. So that's where they were with Ryan Griffin. You've got 3 draft picks in the last 2 years. His days were numbered, and now at least he gets out there and has a chance to sign with the Patriots.
When you played for the Texans and the Jaguars, did you have some instances of when the mini camp happens and it was, like, really clear that the draft pick
yeah
was not going to contribute.
And it was, boy, if I think I could, I can't think of the first guy that popped in my brain. I'm not going to bring his up because he's actually passed away since then. But it was pretty evident this kid couldn't move. And he was drafted.
He couldn't move.
Well, one thing that Coughlin's always been vulnerable to this is he loves size. And this is one thing I'm watching with Brian Gain a little bit, because Brian Gain comes from that same Parcells school where they're so in love with size that sometimes they take offensive linemen that are just big hulking brutes but can't actually play football. And there was a kid in Jacksonville who was just like that. Like, I think he probably had a good 40 time and he was big and everything. He just flat out couldn't play football. And he was from a smaller school, but he got to mini camp and you're like, this guy, I'm amazed that he's not falling down every time he takes a step, because that's how awkward he is. But he was huge, this kid. And that's what Coughlin did with that offensive tackle that they drafted in
Eric
the first
Flowers.
Round. Eric Flowers. He was just a big hulking brute.
Yep.
You watch him on film, you're like, the guy can't move. Like, he's lucky. He's lucky. If he weren't, sometimes you can't draft a guy that, like, if he weren't 6'7", if you draft a guy in the first round, and he's 6'7", but if he were 6'4", he wouldn't even be in the NFL.
Yes.
You can't take that guy in the first round. Coughlin did it routinely.
That's good advice.
Yeah. So that's what I worry about with some of these guys. So that's what I'll be watching with Sharping, because I think Sharping at right tackle is very much a guy who is like his huge. The thing that sets him apart is his size. He is a big dude. Like, he is all of whatever he's listed at, 6'6", 325 or whatever. He looks huge. Can he actually play football? This is what you want to watch.
Next headline, the Raptors stay alive in the Eastern Conference Finals. They beat the Bucks 118-112 in double overtime in Game 3. Kawhi Leonard scored 8 in that second overtime. He led the way with 36 points to pull that series to within 2-1 Milwaukee. I'm still feeling like this is going to be Golden State and Milwaukee coming up in a week and a half. My biggest takeaway is that if Milwaukee has to play an extra game or two, it only continues to help Golden State, who, if they finish off the Blazers tonight, I mean, my God, they're going to have basically, you know, 9 full days off before the NBA Finals with, I don't want to say an older team, but some guys who can certainly, like Andre Iguodala, use that kind of rest. That would be a huge break. And obviously the Kevin Durant thing.
Yeah, plenty of time for Kevin Durant to get back in and muck things up. Mess up the whole chemistry thing there, Mike.
I do think they'll need Durant against Milwaukee.
Yeah. What do you think of the Antetokounmpo Euro step that everybody's claiming is a travel? The gather step, I feel like in Houston we can't criticize anything that might involve a gather
definitely
step.
Definitely cannot.
So it's I've become so well acquainted with the gather step in any and all basketball moves that I think Antetokounmpo, if you've seen this highlight of him Euro stepping from the baseline to the rim, I say completely legal and clear, because I need all of James Harden's step back threes to be completely legal.
I guess objectively it's a little sketchy, but it's not a huge deal to me.
It's still, it falls into that category of still pretty damn impressive, even if it wasn't quite legal.
Next headline, it got a bit dicey on Sunday, but Brooks Koepka held off Dustin Johnson to win the PGA Championship.
Face of golf.
So, on that note, as Paul mentioned, if you're keeping score at home, Brooks Koepka has now won the last 2 U.S. Opens, the last 2 PGA Championships, and yet it doesn't seem like Brooks Koepka is a huge deal. He's an American, which usually helps star power. What would it take for Brooks Koepka to become a star?
He is a star. You guys are just, you know, terrible golf fans and aren't appreciating him the way that you should. He's Gucci, bro. And guys need to appreciate that he is the best golfer that there is. Doesn't even care that much about it, but he is better than everyone.
Why don't they, like, so there's DJ Chance all over the place yesterday. Koepka acknowledged that he heard it. So what makes Dustin Johnson more lovable, I guess?
I don't know.
To men.
Because
we know he's lovable to women, but to men.
Because of Paulina Gretzky, and they're impressed by that? I don't know.
Do you think there's something about...
He's lovable to women.
Well, do you think there's something about watching a... Not that Koepka's not like this, but watching a guy like Dustin Johnson who just bombs it.
Yeah.
That people, they just enjoy that sort of display of raw power. And plus, they wanted to see some competition, because it was not a competition for most of the last
I think it was
days.
The more, in this instance, it was the comeback nature of it, I think. Yeah,
I think so, too.
Like, pulling for the underdog.
Mad Radio on a Monday. I found this really funny. So, I'm kind of glancing through some of the football columns this morning, and this is what Albert Breer wrote about the Texans' offensive tackle situation on the MMQB. He wrote, you know, he's writing about Titus Howard and Max Sharping. He has some interesting things about Titus Howard and how the Texans had basically targeted him for 2 or 3 weeks leading to draft weekend. But he wrote, Max Sharping, for his part, has flashed early in Houston. Flashed by doing what?
Wait a second.
Flashed.
All right. This is just funny because how sloppy Albert Breer's gotten with him just like obviously disclosing stuff that people are from giving him from the organization. Has there been anything written by anybody about how Sharping flashed at minicamp? Because
no.
He didn't. He like there's the only guy that really flashed at minicamp was Waring, I think.
That's the guy that you guys like.
Right. And like that's who people have mostly been writing about. Sharping like looked fine enough. I wasn't particularly impressed with the way he was moving, but that's not his deal anyway. And you're not going to be able to tell a whole lot until they get out there with pads. With Sharping especially. Tytus Howard, I was impressed with the way he moved. Sharping, I need to see him like out there with physical contact where he can use his length and everything. But yeah, so what I read from that is that the coaches have told, or somebody in the front office has told Breer that Sharping looks really good and they're really happy with him. That's enough for me.
That's what that's saying.
We didn't see him out there on Saturday. I mean, the guy might have been out there trucking kids on Saturday. Maybe he was out there like the mountain just throwing peasants down to the turf and ripping their guts out. We weren't there on Saturday.
How do we define flash? Really? What did he actually flash somebody? Because then that would be accurate.
That would be news.
I mean, that would be an accurate report. Max Sharping, very, very down with being open about his sexuality. Like that. Like, but to say, okay, he flashed. I'm really struggling to think about what he possibly could be. Did he know everything that he was supposed to do?
If he flashed, yeah, he'd be really sharp. He would absorb everything. Because that is one of the things they look for with offensive linemen, is how much information are you taking in and can you process it really well? And Paul, I know we talked about that a little bit last week because O'Brien had brought it up. But that is like, that's the standard NFL thing, is we're going to give these guys a bunch of information and see how well they absorb it, because that's kind of what happens in a game week.
Yeah.
You get a bunch of information and you got to go out to the practice field and absorb it right away. So I would guess that, yeah, hopefully that was part of it. And I think O'Brien specifically mentions Sharping's intelligence out there.
He did.
And then I think also, like what we were just talking about, that time that Coughlin drafted a guy that couldn't move and they realized it when he showed up on the practice field, I think there is some part of that where you just really want to see a guy in your element, you know, amongst a bunch of other players, and be sure, yeah, even though you've seen him at college all-star games and on film and whatnot, that he's the real deal. So I don't know if Breer probably would have chosen flash as the word to use again, but maybe they're
has impressed.
Maybe
early.
Yeah, he's impressed. Yeah, maybe
that
he's
would
impressed
make more
him.
Sense.
Yeah, there we go.
Because these guys aren't out there right now, and OTA start today. These guys are not out there in pads right now.
Right.
They're not going to be out there in pads until basically a few days into training camp.
Right. And with offensive linemen, this is what they'll be looking for with Sharping, is how do his feet look? You know, if he's out there and he's playing right tackle and he's going against speed rushers, if Whitney Mercilus is trying to get upfield on him or Jadeveon Clowney, those guys aren't going to be bull rushing. It's all about how does Sharping's feet look? Does it look like he can comfortably get back in his kick slide to block guys like that and then redirect? So, and that's what Sharping really needs to work on. This portion of the spring is really actually very valuable for guys like Sharping, because when you take the physicality out of it, it really highlights and exposes where your feet are and where your hands are. So he'll get an opportunity to really show that, okay, I'm not going to be able to beat anybody with my size right now. I got to do it with my feet.
That's an interesting observation.
This is one thing, like with guys with bad hands, sometimes when they have pads on, coaches don't do this anymore because they'd get sued, but you actually take a guy's helmet off. But like you're gonna learn, like if you got a big physical guy that just uses his body too much, you're like, okay, we're going to take your helmet off.
I like that.
And then you go ahead and try to headbutt somebody out here. No, you're going to have to use your hands.
I like that strategy. Yeah. Well, because I'm reading this from Albert Breer this morning, and Breer is the guy to me who is most connected to the Texans, who's not covering the team from a local angle. And he wrote, if the Texans wind up starting Tytus Howard and Max Sharping as bookend tackles, scored as a big win for second-year GM Brian Gain. But, okay.
How is that a big win necessarily? Like, it's good that they theoretically have upgraded the position long-term, but if it's a big win, that means that they're beating out Chantrell Henderson, who's always hurt, and Matt Khalil, who is hurt.
It's only a big win if they start and they play well.
Yeah.
Well, and if it's a big win if they actually, like if he beats out Chantrell Henderson, it's a big initial win. But y'all, look, you know that the high draft picks have a leg up in that competition. That's who they want to start. That's they get the benefit of the doubt. Him starting and not sucking is the big thing.
Yes, I agree with that part. I would be very scared if Max Sharping was starting early this season.
It makes me nervous, yeah, but if he actually impresses and goes out there and does all right, this is what you have to remember. Kendall Lamb made a lot of improvement last year. And look, I'm not going to be out here like Daryl Morey talking about how, like, hey, Kendall Lamb gave up fewer sacks than other people in the second. Yeah, no, whatever. It wasn't great. He got better. Julian Davenport struggled, got a little bit better. But the entire year, when they faced good players, they had to use a tight end. They had to use a running back to help out in pass protection. It's not going to get any worse than it already was. So if Sharping goes out there and is just okay, or if he struggles some as a rookie, it's not going to be too much worse than what you've had with Kendall Lamb the last couple of years, or what you had with Julian Davenport last year, or what you had with Bruno Giacomini, like all these guys. It's been really, really, really bad.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Seth. You mentioned the week after the draft, like those shows that we did,
yeah,
that you felt like Sharping was a couple of years sort of project.
That's, yeah. But so what I'm saying is, if he starts and it's because he actually beat Chantrell Henderson out, then he actually did come along, and Albert Breer's about him. But you're right. I'm not optimistic that that's going to happen.
I'm not optimistic either.
I'm optimistic about Tytus Howard. I'm not optimistic about Sharping, but I'm perfectly willing to be proven wrong.
Obviously, the best thing for all parties involved is that these guys come in, they play great, and they start week one against the Saints. But more realistically, I'm going to be far more comfortable with just Tytus Howard starting week one against the Saints, as McClain is claiming will happen. And then right tackle will be Henderson, at least for a while, at least for however long he can stay healthy.
It's going to be hard for me to be comfortable with any of these guys starting on the field for a while, especially week one in the Superdome with the Whistle Monster against the New Orleans Saints. It's going to take me some time before I feel like that's a victory.
Yeah.
And I don't like that's sort of the vibe that I think Albert Breer wants to be coming out of Texans offseason, is that, yeah, these young guys stepping in there, it's a victory. It could be. It definitely could be. But to say it right now, that's a lot.
Well, it was kind of like when Rick Smith never cut a draft pick. Like, if you call that a victory, it's kind of like, well, yeah, but you're the one in charge of being sure that your draft picks don't get cut. After a while, it becomes it's not a victory if you never cut a draft pick. All that means is that those guys aren't having to compete. So him starting doesn't tell me a whole lot if I know the coaches and GM really want him to start.
OTAs begin today. What are the most important parts of OTAs? And I agree with Paul. If I were the Texans, I would still absolutely be willing to trade for Patrick Peterson. This is Mad Radio.